I'm Brandi Cruz. There is renewed outrage over COVID relief funds given to illegal immigrants. Plus, protesters who blocked I-5 could actually see a day inside a courtroom. And the Seattle Times calls on Democrats to give hearings to those voter initiatives. Finally, we hear from the concerned citizens who held a stakeout to catch a sign thief. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Welcome, a special welcome to our Undivided subscribers who help support our show during this critical election year. I want to start with good news today. I want to start with like something I'm happy about, you know, because I'm nothing if not a positive person. I saw this tweet come out from Jason Rantz today, who has been tracking this story, I think, more closely than anyone. You know, we've talked about the pro-Hamas slash pro-Palestine. I think there is a little gray area in between there. But demonstrators who have been blocking all sorts of stuff. What can we ruin today to try to get attention to whatever our cause is at the moment? Be it a Christmas tree lighting we're going to ruin because we think that our voice is more important than anyone else's. Or they're going to block a bridge or a sound transit station. And of course, they also blocked I-5 for hours on end a few weekends ago. And I will say the backlash against them for doing that was pretty swift and not just isolated to political talking heads like me or like Jason Rantz. Because, you know, 5-6 hours of traffic delayed on the most critical stretch of interstate in our state was a big deal. The Washington State Patrol was pretty heavily scrutinized and criticized after that, as was the governor, who still, I don't even know if the governor has even acknowledged to this day the interruption, when, of course, had it been right-wing Nazis who were blocking the interstate, it wouldn't have been a problem at all. But Jason Rantz says on Twitter, Washington State Patrol will recommend charges against six activists from the anti-Semitic protests that shut down I-5 in Seattle. 10 additional activists are under investigation. It will be up to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office to charge. But will she? Will she indeed is the question. But hey, I got to give credit to everyone who raised holy hell about this and about the hypocrisy of, you know, our elected leaders not saying or seemingly doing anything and letting these people feel so emboldened. I don't think we would see this. I mean, the State Patrol, remember, they were putting out like first just little statements, and then these long pages of statements trying to explain why they didn't clear the interstate. And this does not relieve them of the criticism for not arresting those people on the spot. We wouldn't be dealing with weeks later now news that they're going to suggest charges to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office had they arrested these people day of when they refused multiple orders to clear the interstate and they even blocked ambulances. And we were right at the exit ramp to the most critical intensive care hospital in the entire state. We shouldn't be here 2 weeks later talking about this. And I think that is the question, as Jason Rantz pointed out, are they going to charge them? I think they will. I do believe that King County Prosecutor Lisa Mannion will. I know she's a little more progressive than I would like a prosecutor to be. But I think given the outrage over this particular act of civil unrest, given the criticism elected leaders have gotten for not saying anything, I believe that she will. I don't know, and we've reached out to the King County Prosecutor's Office this morning, and we're waiting to hear back. We don't know what the charges could potentially be, how serious those charges might be. And then, you know, 10 additional activists under investigation, you know, will those come to fruition? We don't know. But I think this is a good step. And I do, had people not been as livid as they were, I don't think that we would be here right now. So your voice absolutely matters. I do also want to read the probable cause and the police reports when we can get our hands on them, because I'm curious if they were able to track these people down through their vehicles, which we thought early on would be the only way. You know, they brought these vehicles onto the interstate to block traffic, and then I think they just left them there. And so in some instances, that's a pretty easy way to figure out, okay, who does that car belong to, unless you stole it, obviously. Who does that car belong to, and can you trace it to the actual person who was on the freeway that day? So a little good news, a little sliver of sanity to start the show today. You love to see it. Although over the weekend, there was, you know, some of these I'm like, how dare they? You know, how dare they block an interstate for 5 hours and disrupt everyone else's lives? But then there's some things that these pro-Hamas or Hamas sympathizers do where I'm kind of like, yeah, I like it. Like, do that. So this weekend was an example of that. So they put out this flyer that they're going to have a rally at Green Lake Park. And this was yesterday at 3 p.m. Shut it down for Palestine. And I saw that. I'm like, please do. Please do, on the only sunny day we've had in a while, shut down Green Lake Park where all the granola progressives are walking their dogs. Please do that, because unless you do that, I don't know that we're going to get people to change their minds and how they vote. Like, those progressives who live in their little enclaves out of downtown Seattle might not have been impacted by the Christmas tree lighting disruption or by the blockade on the bridge or by the blockade of I-5. But man, when they're trying to picnic at Green Lake Park and read their books and walk their dogs, and they get disrupted by some pro-Hamas sympathizers or whoever for that matter, maybe that will actually be the thing that gets them to wake up. So Hamas sympathizers, I am fully in support of protests. Where else? That's what I want to hear from you guys. Where else should the Hamas sympathizers protest that might actually make a difference? I bet you have some really good suggestions, so let me hear it. Okay, there was a story that caught apparently everyone's attention over the weekend, and I saw it, and I'm like, yeah, we knew that. And so it was sort of odd to watch this all unfold and this outrage that bubbled up online for something that we've known about for a couple years. So it was Fox News that originally reported the story. I think the New York Post has since picked up on it. The headline, Washington State diverted $340 million in federal COVID relief funds to immigrants, including via $1,000 checks. The program began in 2020 and ended last year. And after this was posted, you had, I mean, some of my conservative friends in the media and on social media, you know, putting this out there like, how dare they? This is a travesty, whatever it is. And I'm sitting here thinking, and Nicole's sitting here thinking, we knew that. Nicole covered it on Dory's show. Dory covered it extensively. I talked about it. It's like, and so I was a little surprised. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that Fox News would sort of resurrect it, because they're a national platform. They're not trying to inform a specific local population. And there had been, I think the genesis for it was, there was a new report released by the Economic Policy Innovation Center, which looked at money spent, COVID relief funds, and how they were spent state to state. And so Fox News saw this in Washington State, $340 million in federal COVID relief funds going to illegal immigrants. And they made that their headline. Not a surprise. I think more of a surprise for me that it was sort of bandied about locally without that context of, this wasn't a secret. And I think that's what the Fox News article comes across as. It's like, oh, this revelation in 2024. No, not only was this not a secret, Washington state government was very proud of it. And they continue to celebrate what a success this effort was. And in fact, the government website is still up. Nicole looked this morning. It says that the fund is closed, but they had a whole website, immigrantreliefwa.org, for the COVID-19 Immigrant Relief Fund. It says final payments went out in early 2023 and the helpline is now closed. It says between 2020 and 2023, the Washington COVID-19 Immigrant Relief Fund provided an unprecedented $400 million in COVID relief money for over 100,000 immigrants in Washington state. And they say $400 million because there was obviously also money that wasn't included in that federal COVID relief, $340 million, that also went out to undocumented immigrants. So they're totally proud about it. In fact, 7 months ago, they posted a video about it on this site.
When the federal government offered stimulus checks and financial support to help communities make it through the pandemic, they intentionally left out millions of undocumented immigrants in our communities. All of us who call Washington home deserve support to make it through the pandemic.
So we did something about it. We organized and called on Governor Inslee to create a state fund for our undocumented community with the support of over 400 organizations and groups.
The Governor's Office and the Department of Social and Health Services established the Washington COVID-19 Immigrant Relief Fund in 2020. Between 2020 and 2023, we have distributed over $400 million into the hands of community members across the state.
So again, this is not news. This is not a, well, it is news. I'll get to that in a second. But it is not brand new news. It's not breaking news. It's not a secret. They're very proud about it. And as you see from that video, the stated mission was to get around, go around barriers for that federal fund to actually go to Americans or people who are here legally, documented immigrants, to help them. And so there was this anger from a certain set of progressives that, oh, but this, we can't give this COVID federal money to undocumented immigrants. Well, let's find all these back channels and do it, and then let's celebrate it. And they actually released a report with all their conclusions. I mean, all this stuff is online, their conclusions. In the end, the 2022-2023 round of the Immigrant Relief Fund granted payments of $3,075 to over 100,000 applicants. All in all, the perspective that community comes first was evident and made the Washington COVID-19 Immigrant Relief Fund a major success. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber poll, I'll get to it in a moment, whether you knew, because I think sometimes we live in this bubble where we're like, well, we talked about it, didn't you hear? But it also shows, I think, a failure of the media at large to cover this with the criticality that was warranted at the time. I mean, I had a lot of personal frustration, which is one of the reasons I left my job in mainstream news, with the coverage of the pandemic. Things like this didn't get covered critically. I mean, when you really step back now in hindsight and look at this, we had business owners who lost their livelihoods. We still today have businesses who are fighting fines from the government for operating their business or not wearing a mask during the pandemic. There were a lot of legal, hardworking Washingtonians who didn't get a dime in COVID relief funds. And all that's happening, so the government is putting its foot on hardworking Americans, making it difficult for them to earn a living, if not impossible, to the point where some of them lose everything they've worked hard for. And at the same time, it is actively out in the open and proudly circumventing rules put in place when it came to COVID relief funds from the federal government to get checks out to people who came into this country illegally. Like, look, I am sympathetic. I understand, you know, to a certain extent, you know, if you've got a family that came here illegally and you've got, I mean, a lot of all sorts of sectors were shut down, including sectors that a lot of immigrant workers earn a living in. And I get it that some of them come here and they've got kids. And so it's like, gosh, do you want to punish the kid by them not having their parents not having food for, you know, money for food or electricity or whatever it is? But it doesn't change the underlying issue that these people came into our country illegally. And we're now seeing that right now with them outside City Hall demanding to be given housing while they wait asylum claims that may or may not be legitimate, and all these resources being pulled in every direction over on the East Coast, them shutting down community centers that serve a community that's predominantly people of color that the left says that they care about. So now kids can't go there swimming and playing basketball because now it's being used to house illegal immigrants, or the school that was temporarily closed down in New York to house illegal immigrants and kids from families that pay tax money to run the school system had to go home and learn from home, remote learn. So it is crazy looking at it in hindsight, but again, it didn't happen in private. It wasn't quiet. People were very proud of it. Just to gauge the level of recognition about this, though, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, were you aware that Washington, prior to this Fox News report, were you aware that Washington was giving $340 million plus dollars in COVID relief funds to illegal immigrants? And I will say, a lot of you were not aware, at least not to that extent. Right now on Patreon, 94% of people taking the poll said they did not know this. That's a failure of the media. I mean, I like to believe that everyone in Washington watched me and listened to Dory Monson at that time, but that is not true, obviously. Carrie Herder says, I was aware because some of the funds used to pay for this came from money that was supposed to help assisted living facilities with the medical and staffing costs they were having to deal with because of COVID. Selena says, I'm so mad at how our state and federal government spend our money so easily. Earth Scraper, Earthscaper 302 says, I don't know if I've read a comment from you before, so welcome if you're a new subscriber. Even if we did know, no one in control could care less. That was free federal money anyway, so no need to use that money for the taxpayers who generated it. Just a drop in the bucket of the billions wasted yearly, truly. Let's see what's happening over on Locals. Annette TN says, I didn't know, but I spent as much time as I could out of this state during COVID to keep my sanity. Have a hard time agreeing to continue to give stuff away to those who did not take a legal route of entry. And that is a good point that we have to keep in mind, and I've been making this argument right now as we see the influx of people who don't have legitimate asylum claims into this country or who didn't come here through a legal path. They are also taking resources away from immigrants who are here legally, who took a difficult, sometimes lengthy process to get here by various means, even immigrants who came up here on work visas. You are, as much as the government doesn't like to admit it, there is an end to the money, at least on the state level. I guess the feds can just print more money. But when you take from that pool as an illegal immigrant, you're not only taking from tax-paying citizens, but you're also taking from legal immigrants who are contributing, who are paying taxes. And I thought the left cared about them too. So that's where it's like, what is your priority? Who is your priority? Let me see. Crafty Grandma Crispy says, I didn't remember, but my husband did. And Weisscastle says, it wasn't a secret, just underplayed. And as usual, they went way over budget. Yeah, because they had said, like, I think it was $40 million they were going to give. And then they obviously gave more than that from the state, and then the federal money was just through the roof. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I look at that and I'm like, yeah, of course, we knew about that. It was bad when it happened, but obviously it was undercovered. It wasn't covered critically enough, and now it's having this renewed anger around it, which I'm not saying we shouldn't be angry about it still. And I'm not saying that, and I also, as I said, in light of everything else that's happening, this just underscores the ridiculousness of it all. Okay, coming up next, the Seattle Times Ed Board, after a couple terrible stories, is now finally calling on Democrats in Olympia to give a hearing to those six initiatives we've been talking about. I'll go through the Seattle Times argument, which I think is a very good one, coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. I think he's awaiting eagerly the Fed hopefully dropping interest rates this year. You know, they were talking in December like, oh yeah, we're going to have 3 rate cuts. And then they met last week, didn't drop rates. And there's a question of, okay, they probably will in 2024. They've forecasted 3 rate cuts, but when is that going to come? And as Wes says, you know, he's been doing this for a long time. He survived the whole housing downturn as a real estate agent. He says, when that comes, you will see the real estate market heat up pretty quickly.
Do you think interest rates need to be at to really get the market back up and humming again?
I think if we get into the high fives, that is going to be a real breakthrough. You know, when we were at 7 and now into the high sixes, that brought in another section of buyers. And if we get that into the low sixes or high fives, I think things will really start to move again. And, you know, we're already seeing multiple offers in a lot of different price points and, you know, different cities. It's going to make housing more affordable, and it's going to bring more buyers out into the market again. What's that going to do? It's going to push the prices back up. So one of the things that I do see happening, or could see happening in 2024, is all of the gains that we lost in 2022, I think there's a really good chance we make those up in 2024.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But the best thing to do if you know you're going to want to list your home in 2024, get ready. Have it ready when that drop happens to hit the market and take advantage of that demand, that pent-up demand. So reach out to Wes Jones and his team, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. They've got a lot of great services to offer. Their Listing Boost concierge service, they can get your home ready, help pay for cosmetic improvements up front, and then you just repay them on the back end after your home sells. A lot of good stuff. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Okay, I was very disappointed with the Seattle Times' coverage of our rally in Olympia last week, but they may have redeemed themselves because they are now calling on Democrats to give a hearing to those 6 voter initiatives. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Man, the Seattle Times has been all over the place with these voter initiatives. And I do have to differentiate between the Times newsroom and the Seattle Times editorial board, because we are going to talk about them separately, as we should. One does opinion, one is not supposed to do opinion. But, you know, we held this rally with around 200 people in Olympia last Wednesday with a simple ask. Hold hearings for these initiatives, even if you're not going to sign them into law. I mean, we know you're not going to sign them into law. They would repeal some of your key policy victories on the Democratic side, but there's no downside to giving them a hearing, to hearing from voters who are impacted by your policies, like the Climate Commitment Act and how it's impacted gas prices, the police pursuit law and how it has led to deaths in our state, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I really think it's a result of one party control, and that control being so solidified that they could have more than 800,000 voters who sign these things, and they still don't feel any sort of obligation or pressure simply to give them a hearing. And it's very out of line with how initiatives to the legislature are usually dealt with. Because for the last 20 years, we had to go back to 2004 to find a time when an initiative to the legislature wasn't simply given a hearing. So now we've got six of them. We've got time running out on the legislative session, and we haven't heard anything about a willingness to give any of them a hearing. So after that rally, I read the Seattle Times article from the newsroom on the rally, and I was disappointed about it, kind of for personal reasons, but also, you know, Future 42 held this rally. I hosted the rally. Let's Go Washington was obviously a big part of that. We had the Citizen Action Defense Fund there, which announced a demand letter on behalf of John and Amber Goldade, whose daughter was killed by a guy in a stolen landscaping truck and would be alive today if it weren't for the police pursuit law. So there were all these, I think, important elements of this rally. And what did the Times' coverage focus on? It was like Republicans versus Democrats. And they erased, first of all, they had no mention of me by name, no mention of Future 42, no mention of Citizen Action Defense Fund, no mention of Let's Go Washington. And then it was like, it was as if I wasn't even present, which I almost felt like was intentional, because it's like, If they make it about me or about these other groups, then they can't make it about Republican versus Democrat. And that's what this whole article was about. Oh, Republicans are demanding this. And then the Democrat argument. And I don't think that's fair, because frankly, when we look at more than 800,000 voters who signed onto at least one of these initiatives, I don't even think that there's 800,000 Republicans in Washington state. And we know that Let's Go Washington, they did through their own processes some analysis of the voters who signed them, and they actually found that there was a greater percentage of Democrats and independents who signed these. So I just think it's a false narrative to make it all about, oh, here's what Republican lawmakers said at the rally, and here's the Democratic response. And it leaves out a whole swath of us, like me, who I don't consider myself either. And I'm very passionate about them just giving these things an initiative, not to mention that the state constitution sort of demands that they do that. So anyway, I was not happy with the Seattle Times, and I complained about it, that article, pretty profusely. And then maybe they made up for it a little bit on the editorial side of things. So the Seattle Times editorial board came out with this op-ed over the weekend. Washington Democrats hold hearings on the initiatives. They wrote, state lawmakers have already debated hundreds of bills as they approach the midway point of a short legislative session in Olympia. But ruling Democrats have yet to allow a hearing on any of the half dozen GOP-backed initiatives that, if passed by voters, would have profound impacts on future public policy in Washington. And the argument they make, I actually think, is a pretty sound one. What they're saying is that this is a better form to have a factual debate than what we will see happen over the next 9 months. What we're going to see happen over the next 9 months are a bunch of special interest groups, we're already seeing it, who are going to run ads that are going to be deeply dishonest. I mean, we already see some of the dishonesty that has come out about the initiatives, but, oh, it's going to kill the environment, it's going to take us back decades, which makes no sense. And so, and I'm not going to rule out the other side as well. I don't know. I mean, we see in an election year that people tend to bend the truth. People tend to gaslight in political ads, and they give something, they hold something up as the best version of it or the worst version of it, and it's confusing as heck to voters. But in a hearing, at least there are some ground rules to be able to hear both sides lay out their case. Now, you're not fact-checked during a hearing, but I suppose committee members would have an opportunity to respond to you, to ask you questions, and to fact-check in that realm. But the Seattle Times ends their op-ed by saying that it would provide a credible conversation, pro and con, that will serve everyone. To instead choose to let the initiatives go to the ballot to be defended by political ads concocted by special interest spinmeisters on all sides will not. Respect voters by giving them a preview of the larger debate to come. And that's always been what this is about. I have never said, like, I want hearings so we can only talk about people who hate it. No, hearings are open to everyone. If you want to sign up and you're against these initiatives or you're for them, great. This is about letting people's voices be heard. I'm not going to sit here and fight for the people's voices to be heard in Olympia, but only the people who agree with me on the initiatives. That's absurd. We're fighting for everyone's rights. We're fighting to respect and maintain this important tool that we have at our disposals to put a check on the legislature as the voters via initiative and referendum. And I'm fighting for the rights of even the people who are in love with the Climate Commitment Act, in love with the tax on capital gains. I want you to testify in Olympia too. I would love to hear your side of things. And I really wish that Democrats who are in control of what gets a hearing and what doesn't get a hearing were just as eager to hear from both sides on this issue. Now, they have given all sorts of reasons, as I said, for what the delay has been. I was listening to a Democrat leadership media availability, and here's what Representative Joe Fitzgibbon said when asked about sort of the delay in any sort of action on these initiatives.
We need more information about these in order to decide our next steps. We're still awaiting fiscal notes on most of the initiatives. We're still trying to unpack what we think the legal impact of each of these six initiatives would be, unlike a piece of legislation introduced by a member of the House or the Senate, which is drafted by our nonpartisan staff. This was drafted, not by our nonpartisan staff, so there's a little bit more ambiguity over what some of the consequences might be. So, the truth is we've been spending a lot of time talking internally about what do we think these initiatives do. What do we think? What kind of latitude does the legislature have to consider alternatives? What if we were to pursue an alternative? What could that cover? And those are just questions that we're grappling with.
I get that, but you don't need to have all those questions answered to do a hearing. You don't. We know, and you know that you're not going to sign these into law anyway. So you don't need to have a full accounting of every single impact in order to hear from people. And in fact, the hearings can help you learn more about the initiatives. The hearings, you get a chance, like I said, to have people who support them, people who oppose them. You're going to have groups like SEIU and other entities who are going to claim that they're going to be negatively impacted by them. They can come to the hearing and tell you what the impacts would be, what they think the impacts would be. So it kind of baffles me why Democrats don't look at the hearings as a learning opportunity to ask questions, get answers, hear from both sides, and then decide how you want to proceed from there. I don't believe that you don't know what the impact's going to be. These things have been around for, 9 months. They've been out there. They've been circulating. People have been signing them. You knew they were coming to the legislature. So I know the government works slow when it wants to work slow, but I have a hard time, believing that you don't know what you're going to do more than halfway through the legislative session. I think Democrats know exactly what their plan is behind the scenes. And I firmly reject the idea that you don't have enough information to have a simple hearing. You're having hearings on all sorts of other things. They undergo changes in committee. You ask questions, whatever it is. So that's just an excuse, and it's not a very good one. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And make sure you sign up for their newsletter, because we are going to be having another rally in February. And so you can get notified about that and just be in the know about everything that is going on. All right. It's a weird time for insurance. I'm sure you've heard this from folks. The insurance companies, their profits probably aren't where they want them to be. And you have individuals, we've heard from them, who are getting dropped after filing just small claims. And that's because insurance companies, they are a business. They are in it for profit. And if they think that you're a liability above and beyond a regular person, then yeah, they're going to drop you like a hot potato. And that is why it's important to have someone working for you, on your side. Firstmark Insurance is a wonderful insurance broker. They've been doing this for a really long time in our area, and they work for you. They don't work for the insurance companies. So they're going to be there to fight on your behalf if something is going on. Like if you have a carrier that wants to drop you, God forbid they do, they can go out and find you another one. They're going to take care of all that. They're going to bring you recommendations about how to keep your costs down, how to make sure that you have the insurance you need and you don't have the insurance that you don't need. And the best part is they're going to do all that for free. You get something you need anyway, insurance, and you get it completely handled by an expert who's never going to charge you a dime. No brainer. Dave Taylor is the CEO of Firstmark, and he says that he really sees folks struggling right now to, like I said, find new carriers after they get dropped like that.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss. So like a windshield loss.
Sure.
Right? Just a little ding in your windshield. And they come in and we don't have a carrier that will take them.
For a ding in their windshield.
Right, for a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already, but it's just, I'm just saying, there's never been a better time to be a broker because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
Yeah, so don't be left flailing trying to navigate the insurance industry by yourself. We ain't got time for that. You guys got jobs, you got things to do. Let Firstmark Insurance and their team do it for you for free. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The first step is to take the Firstmark Challenge. You'll go through, you can do it virtually. Your current insurance, talk to them about your needs. Maybe it's you need to save money. Maybe you need better insurance. That was the situation with Mike and I. We were really underinsured and putting our assets at risk. Firstmarkinsurance.com, they work for you. I could have seen Dave Taylor today. Aren't we? I'm excited. Dave is so sweet. He's the best. Okay. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal went down to Texas to visit the southern border and see the migrant crisis firsthand. Just kidding. She went to Texas, but she went for something else. Let's talk about it in her segment, Unbelievable. All right, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington State tweeted out that she was down in Port Arthur, Texas. And I thought, well, wow, good for her. You know, she's just going to go see how bad things truly are in Texas. And she's going to go back to Congress and she's going to recommend that we tighten border security because things are a mess. But of course, that's not what she went down there for. She said on Twitter, yesterday, I visited Port Arthur, Texas and saw the devastating effects that fossil fuel plants can have on a community. These refineries and LNG facilities are everywhere, polluting the air and water and making entire neighborhoods essentially unlivable. We need more federal accountability and oversight to stand up to big oil, which is why I strongly applaud POTUS's announcement to pause new LNG permits to ensure that the climate effects are taken into account. The path forward is clear. Move away from poisonous fossil fuels, expand clean energy, and invest in the most affected communities to support that transition. In Port Arthur and across the country, we can and must do more to protect our planet and our people. Fine, this is an issue she cares about. I have no problem with the Congresswoman going to visit this and check out that out. But I haven't seen, at least, any indication that while she was there, given the fact that the border is such a critical issue right now, given the fact that there was just this massive bipartisan border bill released out of the Senate that she has a lot to say about, which I'll talk about momentarily, that she wouldn't also take the time to go see what's happening at the border for herself. Now, we've reached out to her office in case she did go to the border and just didn't tweet about it. I mean, I could see, like, she gets there and it's so bad, she's like, "We don't take pictures. Don't take pictures. Don't tell anybody we're here." We've reached out just in case. But as I said, I'll get to the details of this border bill momentarily. We'll get into a little of this national news here as we talk about the Congresswoman. So this border bill, it's bipartisan. It was created in the Senate. And I think it's fair to say that there is like a faction on the right and a faction on the left that doesn't like it. Seems like both sides, there's some who love it on both sides and there's some who hate it on both sides, which honestly, maybe that's the indicator that it's like you're getting somewhere when people on both sides kind of hate it or that it's that bad. But Congresswoman Jayapal, her response to it isn't that much of a surprise. Is, you know, it doesn't have enough of the feel good stuff and it has too much of the not feel good stuff, stop people from coming into our country. She said, it does not create any additional legal and safe pathways for the migrants who are arriving or do anything for the immigrant communities who have lived in limbo waiting for a roadmap to citizenship for decades. Although as I pointed out many times with DACA recipients, Democrats had full control in Congress, a Democrat in the White House, and they also didn't do anything to give citizenship to DACA recipients because they too, just like Republicans, have used them as political pawns. So both sides have acted shamefully when it comes to Dreamers. But she goes on to say, there's no question that we need significant changes to our immigration system. It's long overdue for modernization to allow for efficient and orderly processing of migrants who seek to come to the United States and to increase legal pathways for work and family visas, refugees and asylum seekers. And then she goes on to bring Donald Trump into it because, of course, while Donald Trump abhorrently says immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country, congressional Republicans continue to openly admit they'd prefer the politics of a broken immigration system to a functional just process. I don't think that they've said that, but she goes on to say Democrats have given in to these extremist views over and over for 30 years by refusing to make the structural changes in the Senate needed to pass true reforms, allowing MAGA Republicans to lie to the American people and declining to stand up and defend immigrant communities. It appears that President Biden and Senate Democrats have fallen into the same trap again. So there it is, the MAGA Republicans. And this is 100% true. I think Bill Marles has said this over the weekend. Neither side wants to fix this. I'm in full belief of that. Because there are grains of truth, or I think both sides have a point in what they choose to focus on. We absolutely need more border security. It's insane to suggest that our border is not wide open, that that doesn't have public safety implications for our country in a huge way, that it doesn't drain taxpayer resources, as we discussed earlier in the show. But we also need a system that can more easily process people who do have a legal path to come into the United States. When it comes to whether they're coming here to work or coming here to live or seeking asylum, the fact that it takes a decade sometimes for someone who's going through all the right channels to become a citizen of this country is absurd. And the harder it is to become a citizen legally, the more people are going to choose to come into the country illegally. So you have these grains of truth and common sense on both sides of this debate, but they are so busy, whether it's Jayapal saying, mega Republicans hate immigrants, blah, 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 or whether it's Republicans being like, oh, they just want to, you know, have everyone come in and live off the taxpayer teat. You're like, I get it. And you both want to be proven right, but if you wanted to work together on this, you could. And there's a common sense path there. Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican, Speaker of the House, his tweet doesn't bode well for maybe where this bipartisan funding bill from the Senate is going to go. He said, I've seen enough. This bill is even worse than we expected and won't come close to ending the border catastrophe the president has created. As the lead Democrat negotiator proclaimed, under this legislation, the border never closes. If this bill reaches the House, it will be dead on arrival. And then it'll just be back to square one. So it's so interesting to see Congressman Jayapal be like, this does nothing to help people out. And it's like, on the other side, this does too much, you know, to help people out. It's like, oh my God, you guys are genuinely exhausting. So there's a couple things to know about this border bill, and I'm not going to go through every little thing, but it would fund an increase in ICE detention capacity from 34,000 to 50,000. It would force the federal government to immediately shut down the border if one of these two things happens. If there's a seven-day rolling average of 5,000 encounters per day, or if there's over more than 8,500 encounters in a single day. And then it's like, okay, border closes, which I think that's great. Allocates $20 billion to immigration enforcement, would give money to hire more border patrol agents to help evaluate claims of asylum, would increase the number of deportation flights. But here's, I think, the poison pill for some Republicans. And looking at it, I get it. So Reuters had a graphic that I think is really interesting to look at that has aid provisions in it. So, Nicole, can you pull this Reuters graphic up? Mm-hmm. So, in order to get this additional help at the southern border, there are attachments that, okay, we also have to provide aid elsewhere. So this from Reuters, there would be $2.4 billion in aid for Red Sea conflicts. Let's see here, $4.83 billion to Indo-Pacific nations, $14 billion in aid to Israel, $10 billion in humanitarian aid to the citizens of Gaza, the West Bank, and $60 billion to help Ukraine in its war against Russia. So when you look at, again, an immigration funding bill, $20.2 billion for U.S. border security, $60 billion
for Ukraine. Does that compute to you? And I'm not one of those Republicans who believes don't give Ukraine a dime. I'm not. But when I see the extent of the crisis unfolding in our country at the southern border, the national security implications of it, and all the other things we've already talked about, the fact that you think we need to give $60 billion to Ukraine and spend $20 billion on the border crisis is a failure. And the fact that there are Republicans in the Senate who agreed to that as part of this bipartisan proposal is a failure to me as well. Something for Ukraine. I'm not saying you cut them off completely. I don't believe that at all. I do believe that when you look at what's happening in Ukraine and the fight against Russia, if Ukraine loses, there are broader global implications that will also impact us here at home. But $60 billion versus $20 billion, I can see why some Republicans see that as a poison pill. It's all unbelievable, truly. Okay, Zach Abrams, we just were talking with Wes Jones about, gosh, you know, the market or the rate cuts didn't manifest in the way that perhaps the Fed said they would in December. So is it going to happen in the spring or is it not going to happen? And I will say, Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, who's just a whiz at the financial stuff. And man, I feel like whenever something happens economically, I can go back a couple weeks and he told us it was going to happen. So I'm like, okay, I believe Zach when he says something. And he's pretty skeptical about even in the spring, the Fed deciding to cut rates.
They played it too soft. Financial conditions loosened. Stock markets went up. And we said, okay, we think that's going to result in the hotter data economically in the first quarter of this year. That's exactly what we've seen, which that hotter data takes being able to cut out of his hands. And so now he's not going to be able to cut in March, which means rates are going to stay higher for longer. And you're just looking at these guys going, can somebody please be an adult in the bloody room, rip the Band-Aid off, and let's get on with it. But they just won't do it. It just extend and pretend.
Yeah. If you're looking for an adult in the room anywhere in D.C. or the Beltway, you are simply not going to find it. So we've got all this going on, the election looming, global unrest, as we just talked about, rising cost of living, unforeseen market fluctuations. So if you're close to retirement, if you're working hard to save for retirement, if you're in retirement, leaving your portfolio and your retirement open to risk in 2024 is a terrible idea. That's why I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham. He's the chief investment officer at Bulwark Capital. He's also host of the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Their Know Your Risk Portfolio Review, it's a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk, plain and simple. That's what they specialize in, managing your risk. That doesn't mean they don't want to make you money. They obviously want to make you money, but they don't want you to be overexposed to risk, especially in a year like this. So schedule that risk review at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Okay, we're going to skip national news because we have so much good stuff today and stuff we couldn't even fit on the show today that we're going to have to talk about tomorrow, which I'll get to coming up at the end. So I have like this competition in my mind going on between who my favorite citizen in Washington state is right now. One of them, one of my top ones who you're going to hear from tomorrow is an Edenville Middle School teacher who helped his students craft and testify on behalf of a bill that would educate students statewide about the meaning behind the Pledge of Allegiance. And then there's these two citizens in Kitsap County, Scott Hendon and Kim Gerlach. So they are opposed to a bond measure that is up in the North Kitsap School District that would help, you know, with some funding for school construction and all this stuff. They're opposed to it. So like good citizens, they were putting up signs saying no on the bond, no on the bond. And then they started noticing that their signs were going missing. So they did what I would like to say any citizen would do, but no, they did something that probably no other citizen would do, and they tag-teamed a stakeout. And Scott actually went out at one of the areas where their signs were out, and he put up game cameras. And I'll tell you guys, this video is hilarious. So the video clearly shows what looks to be a blonde woman. Nicole, do you have the video? Looks to be a blonde woman, all parka'd out, go up, yank these signs out of the ground, stomping on them to try to break them, and then hucking the wood from the sign. And this is like early in the morning. So anyway,
The kind of interesting aspect of this story, which we'll get to because we're going to talk to Scott and Kim coming up in a second, is who that blonde woman is, allegedly. There is a pretty convincing preponderance of evidence to suggest that it is the superintendent of the North Kitsap School District. Her name is Lauren Evans. Now, police, the sheriff's office, has already said that is their suspect. That based on the preponderance of evidence which Scott and Kim gathered as part of their stakeout, the key suspect in the theft of these no on the school bond yard signs is none other than the North Kitsap School District Superintendent, Lauren Evans. So obviously innocent until proven guilty. She said that she didn't do this, so we're going to tread lightly. But we invited Scott and Kim to come on and walk us through their stakeout and what they found. Scott and Kim, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you for having us.
You're both in the running to be my favorite people of the week. I can't decide between you and the middle school teacher from Eatonville who dragged his kids to the Capitol to talk about the Pledge of Allegiance. It's like neck and neck right now, but I love this story.
Very good.
So talk about why you started the stakeout. You know, what had you started to notice?
So actually, Kim had been out with somebody else and placed some signs in this area. And then a few days later, me and Herd went back out just to kind of re-loop, and they were down. At some point, what I decided to do is, I'm kind of familiar with game cameras, you know, like you'd put on a trail for hunting. And so I went out and bought some game cameras, tried to aim them in a way that I thought would work. It's been a struggle because game cameras, they'll handle so many, but unfortunately, in order to get the signs, I get the road. So I'd get like 500 hits on it a day instead of, you know, 10 on a game camera.
Yeah.
So
because of the cars driving by.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was difficult to go out there, bring the pictures back, look at them, see if I had any good ones, go back out, reload, you know, and so it took a couple of weeks, but we did get some pictures of somebody that would appear to be a woman, appeared to be blonde, had a puffy coat, had silver on the pockets that the camera would pick up, and appeared to be a woman to me. One of them looked like a blonde woman that had stopped. You could see her stepping on the signs and that kind of thing. So I didn't know when I knew she was doing it at night. I didn't know at what time or something, but through the game cameras, we kind of began to isolate it down that, okay, this is happening in the morning, roughly around 6:30. We went out. Kim wasn't feeling good that day, or she probably would have ridden with me, but she just thought, oh, it's better if I don't sit in the same car with you. So we kind of worked out a plan where I would park and go and watch for this, hoping that somebody would come. And I kind of pre-planned, okay, if I see him come, I'm going to call you. She was about a half a mile down the road. So I saw this car come slowing down, and I'm calling her, Kim, it looks like this is going to happen here. And so it did. They stopped. I called. I told her it looks like a pickup to me, and that there's low enough traffic there that there was no cars that came between me and her. So it wasn't like somebody could have got mixed up,
yeah,
you know? And so called her, the gal, well, I'm going to say it's a gal, jumped out of the truck, went around back, jerked the signs out, had a tonneau cover, heard the tonneau cover click, throw it in the back, heard it close. And you know, she was gone in 20, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Very, very quick.
So Kim, pick it up from there. You get the call, you got your stake out. Which I just think is fantastic. I'm laughing. This is very serious stuff, and we'll get to that later. But the way that you guys coordinated this, I just love. So you're staked out. You get the call, and what do you do from there? Pick up the story.
I saw the truck stop. I then started my car, turned on my lights, left Eglon Road, and followed the car down Hansville Road. There was one, maybe two cars. I think there was two cars between us. When we got to the intersection of 104 and Hansville Road, the other two cars went straight and I was able to get behind her. I was on the phone with Scott. I gave him the plate number because it was a red light. I was able to take a picture. Then I zoomed in on the plate number, took the picture. She was in the center lane. Scott pulled up to the right, shined a flashlight in her truck. She then immediately got in the left lane. So I got in the left lane. We're waiting. The light turns green to go straight through. Even though she was in the left lane, she zooms on through. Well, I'm in the left lane, so I got to wait and I got to turn left. Scott's in the right lane. He's got to turn right. Yeah.
Just really quickly, was your goal in continuing to follow the truck to try to get a picture of the person driving it, or?
I just wanted to see where they went. I don't know why I wanted to keep going. I thought we had lost her. So I just happened to go down Front Street, which is the main drag in Paulsbo. And as I get near the Sons of Norway, sounds so crazy, but the door of Sons of Norway opens and there's a woman there with very, very blonde hair who did a hair flip. And that hair flip is what caught my eye in the light, because her hair is so, so blonde. And I looked and I thought, that's Lauren Evans. Oh my gosh, that's the Ford Ranger. So I immediately turned into the parking lot across the street and said, Scott, it's Lauren Evans.
Wow. And up to that point, you had not suspected that it could be the school superintendent who'd been taking these signs.
No. Why would a school superintendent steal yard signs? No, I had no idea.
So
I knew she had a gray truck, but I told Scott several times, she drives a Chevy. Well, I was wrong.
Well, and I think also common sense would say, no way, no way. Like you said, like, that's just not, you would think it, but be like, no way. That's just too absurd. So after that, you do get law enforcement involved. So to what extent have you had contact with law enforcement and what have they told you?
So when we got there, Tama told me she was in Sons of Norway. I pulled in, think fairly quickly, called 911, gave them the best description we could, believing it was her, but we'll let the police sort that out exactly. But it would have been a very good likeness of her if it was not. And so then basically from them, the Paulsbo police showed up within 5 to 10 minutes, I'd say. We gave them the story. They said, okay, it happened outside of the city limits. We want to get the county deputies involved. So it took a while, but then the deputies came. You know, basically we tried to give them the story as accurately as we could that we've just given to you, that this is what we saw. This is how we located them. This is the pictures. And so just kind of move forward like that and waited quite a while. So it's going to be 8 o'clock or thereabout. The meeting gets over, the Rotary meeting gets over at 8:30, and everybody came out except her.
Huh. So she kind of was aware, you think, that, okay, I might have been caught doing this.
I mean, she stole the steak. I shined the light at her. I would think she might have suspected that Kim was following her, even though Kim went by. And then why would she be the only one that waits inside? And everybody else knew they could go out, but she didn't, because I think she had to know.
Yeah. So like you said, this is in the hands of police. I know that they've contacted her at least. She's denied it through the school. In your opinion, based on the preponderance of evidence, do you believe that the school superintendent was stealing your signs?
I'm not going to say. I know what I saw. We'll let the law enforcement make the final decision.
I think the best source of that might be the Sheriff's Department now has out investigation. I don't know if you've received a copy of that. It's pretty conclusive in their opinion that it is, in fact, her. It was, in fact, her car. At the site, the deputies would not tell us if it was, in fact, registered to her. Mm-hmm. The deputies did a great job. Hopefully the prosecutor will look at the evidence and make a fair and just decision.
Yeah. And that's very responsible of you guys. I do want to end with this, though. You know, if it does turn out to be her, and, you know, what message, I guess, do you think that sends to the community if you have someone like a school superintendent who's in favor of this bond, who's trying to, you know, going to those lengths to try to silence people who are opposed to it?
I received an email. Scott got a call from the sheriff's, I think it was a couple of days later, maybe Monday, and said, we'd like to go out to the scene with you and look it over, take some measurements. We want to make sure you were in the right of way. And Brandy, this makes me almost want to cry. I got an email from some woman who said, my son was on the school bus going down Little Boston, and he saw the sheriff's doing an investigation where your signs were stolen. A school bus full of her children, her students, witnessed this. And that makes me so very, very sad.
Yeah, it's not right, and it doesn't teach a good lesson to the kids. I mean, make your pitch, since someone was stealing your signs, make a pitch to our viewers and our listeners about why they should vote no on this bond.
Well, I just back up for a minute. And do we have the highest official in North Kitsap School District telling kids it's okay to cheat on tests if the ends is well? You can cheat at sports if you want. If that is in fact the case, it's terrible. And the school board really needs to show leadership, do the investigation themselves, and find out if it's true. And if it's true, they need to have her removed. But the issues on the bond, there's dozens of them. A lot of it has to do with arrogance and trust. We don't feel like they've been real open. There's one school that they've repeatedly said they were going to rebuild. It's kind of in a separate part of the district. And when fact, what they're going to do is they are going to move it into Paulsbowl, 3.7 miles away, and not rebuild. To me, that is misleading, and most people would find that. We have a 32-year-old school building that she says is, what term does she?
End of life.
End of life, educationally obsolete, or something like that. And it's like, it's a school with warm lights and, you know, how can that? But they want to tear this building down and do a new one. It's like, how does that make any sense? And in fact, the night before I did this, I spoke at the school board and I said, this is about trust, us trusting you, about you believing you're making the right decisions. And then the next morning, this apparent thing happens. So,
I mean, yeah, you can't build trust when you're allegedly stealing yard signs. I can tell you that is one thing that does not build trust. Kim, you wanna, we'll end with you. You got something to add?
We do. We decided to make a website to get our information out. If you want more details on why we question this bond, www.nksdbond.com.
Perfect. We'll send people there. Scott and Kim, love the story. Thank you for caring so much and getting to the bottom of it. It's entertaining, but it's also serious. I mean, we can't have that kind of discourse in our state where you disagree with someone, so you rip their yard signs out or try to silence them. It's really, really quite absurd. But thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing that story with us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Love them. Love them so much. I cannot get enough of that video. Again, I'm laughing, but it is serious. And if she did this, she needs to be charged. If just the video of the game camera with her hucking this sign and stomping on it. So there is, by the way, right now, a change.org petition that's going around. It's called Place NKSD Superintendent on Administrative Leave During Investigation. And right now there are 541 signatures. Their goal is 1,000. I think it's pretty absurd not to put her on leave at this point. You know, I know there's innocent until proven guilty. That's for a court of law. She's innocent until proven guilty of the crime in a court of law. But we have this bond on the ballot for North Kitsap voters now. And the idea that a school superintendent would allegedly, according to the sheriff's office, that's their prime suspect, be out pulling out these no on a school bond signs obviously sends a terrible example to kids. There's no way that she should be able to do her job right now until this investigation is complete. There's just no way. That's insane to me. And we cover a lot of crazy stuff on this show around education and teachers and all that. But this really takes the cake to be so brazen about it. Allegedly, trying to make sure we don't get sued. But if you are a parent in that district, if you're a citizen whose tax money goes to fund that woman's salary, you should be demanding that she's put on leave while the investigation runs its course. All right, we're going to get your questions and comments from the live stream. First, I've been hearing so many great messages about Eastside Weight Loss. Let me find this latest one I got. Hold on. I wasn't planning to read it, so I didn't have it pulled up. But I love, love, love hearing the stories that you guys have about the success that you've had on the program. This from Jean. She said, I wanted to share my three-week update on Eastside. Currently down 13 pounds and 15 inches. In 3 weeks, my energy's up. My hot flashes are almost gone. I've done so many diets over the years. I've never had these results that are helping me stay on track. I'm so thankful that you've shared your experience and took time to chat about the process with me. I love it. I love it. I'm down 37 pounds on the program, and it has been something that you can easily keep going back to in your life. And it's not a magic diet, but I think that's why it's a good one and why it works, is it's not over-promising and under-delivering. So for me, it's just been a game changer. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can do it over the phone. You can do the entire program virtually. So you can do it from anywhere. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, questions and comments from the live stream. What are my friends up to on the internet today? Admin Scott J says, of the, what is this, six? Oh, on the protesters. He says of Jason Rant saying, which we have an update on, that the State Patrol is going to refer charges or suggest that at least six protesters are charged for blocking I-5. Admin Scott J says six. I see a lot more than six there. I expect everyone who blocks traffic on a freeway to become flatter than a cartoon coyote. Oh, like get hit by a car. I mean, they do put themselves in a lot of risk by doing that. And they also put people in a position to maybe hit them and then have to deal with that. So that's crazy. We did just hear back from the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. They said the referral for charges has not come yet from the Washington State Patrol. But Casey McNerthney, who's a spokesperson for the office, said if or when case referrals are sent to the prosecutor's office, each case will be reviewed individually by senior deputy prosecutors. But like I said, I think once that happens, and if the evidence is sound, no doubt in my mind, I think that the King County prosecutor, given the public pressure on this, will charge. Two Ladies Midwest Adventure says, granola progressives, that's new to me, Brandy, with the killer title today. I mean, hey, I like granola too. I just don't live or die by it. Fire 12 says, protest at libraries or Whole Foods? Oh, yeah. Whole Foods, right? A little PCC protest.
Yeah, that'd be good.
You gotta go. I mean, that's what I like to see.
You love PC. Don't do that.
I do love PCC. I, as I've gotten older and valued the dollar more, I stay away from Whole Foods.
You mean since you got married and your husband's making you pay attention to that stuff?
No, since I quit my job and now my bank account is from generous people who support our show. I just can't justify the Whole Foods prices. It's genuinely insane. You know what I've learned to love and appreciate? Trader Joe's. I'll go there and I'll get a bajillion things for like $50. It's really hard to spend $100 at Trader Joe's.
It's the perfect portion size.
Man, it's good.
On everything. Yes, I love it.
This episode brought to you by Trader Joe's.
No offense to Whole Foods, but.
No offense to Whole Foods, but it's too expensive.
Probably worth the extra because it is good not to have all the extra hormones.
There are some grocery stores that shall remain unnamed that I'm not going by your produce or your meat section.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, immigrants and COVID funds. Reagan Morey says, can you imagine how many small businesses could have been saved with that money? Such a good point. Mm-hmm. Such a good point. Erica Dorning, I'm severely disabled by COVID, was hospitalized in the ICU for 3 months. The fact that they prioritized immigrants over helping those who are permanently disabled is just wrong. There is no help for us. Again, and I'm sure that you had medical bills from that. Why can't you get, I mean, if they're going to be doling out cash, I would much rather see that go to helping someone like you with who incurred huge medical bills because of it, as opposed to someone who's in the country illegally, because it just sends the wrong message. The Seattle Times coverage of our rally. Bob Larson says, I was about to say the reason I stopped my Seattle Times subscription was because their front page became their editorial page. Yeah, sometimes it's really hard to tell the difference. I mean, on this show, I give my opinion. I think that's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. You can agree with it or not, but I always want to make sure that you know that it is, at the end of the day, my opinion. The Jerks Take My Names.
And I thought that was a new one. Is that your screen name? I don't remember that one.
Jerks Take My Names. I don't get it. When I heard, maybe he had a screen name he liked and some jerk took it. So now he had to make a new one.
Oh, that's probably it. Mm-hmm.
When I heard him talk about discussing the initiatives, I took it to mean we are having our lawyers look at them to see if we can invalidate them as unconstitutional and get rid of them ASAP. Yeah, probably.
Guarantee it.
Finding a way around them with their buddy Bob Ferguson over in the AG's office.
Most of the money that's involved, like budget-wise, is money they don't even have yet. They've just been really excited about. And so right. They've already spent it ahead right. in their...
They spent it in their minds.
In their minds,
and they've already told their cronies about it. Yeah. And their cronies are like licking their chops at all the money they're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, SEIU. It's going to be a real rough year for you, in my opinion. Jesse Gerlach. Oh, I love this. Camp House. Ha ha, mom. You wouldn't even break the law to keep on her tail. Way to go. Oh, Jesse, that's your mom?
I'm Kim's daughter.
I love that. Oh, my gosh. I love that she was like... Because she was telling us a story about how she'd follow her, but then she's like, okay, I'm going to drive past her and not, you know, confront her, which is good and safe. Don't ever confront a criminal. Right.
But then at the light,
playing it safe.
She lost her at the light.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Love it. Shelly Rose said, it's a total joke. I just filled out my ballot with a big fat reject. And I think one of the most telling things about that interview was Scott saying, you know, we don't trust what they've been telling us about the need for the bond. And the superintendent allegedly stealing out the no on bond signs, not a big trust builder. So for me, even if I was in that community and I thought, okay, there is some need here to invest in the schools and pass this bond, that's it. I changed my vote to no. If you have to get this bond by cheating voters, by breaking the law, you don't deserve it. You don't deserve to be the superintendent, but you also don't deserve this money because you can't be trusted with it. If you can't be trusted to not yank a political sign out of the ground and stomp on it and huck the stick into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Wild stuff. So Shelly, good for you. Okay, let's see. Those are good questions, comments today, guys. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Am I forgetting
something?
Did
you want to say something about the interviews that we put off a little bit?
Oh, yeah. So two stories. We had an awesome episode of Sundays with Subscribers that was about hunting and fishing, which is a topic that we don't typically cover because it shouldn't be political, but it's becoming really political in Washington. So we had on Tom Nelson, who's just a hoot with the Outdoor Line. And I sounded like my mom there.
Oh,
he's just a hoot. And his interview was great. So we're going to play a little clip of it coming up tomorrow about why all of you should care about this issue, not just people who hunt and fish. It's another example of ideology coming before everything else. And then we interviewed the teacher, Mr. Alex Hansen, the middle school teacher in the Eatonville School District, whose students were in Olympia testifying on behalf of a bill they created that would make sure that if you require the pledge in schools, you also require that kids are taught why they say the pledge. So maybe they'll respect it a little bit more.
Right.
This Mr. Hansen is awesome. He's the kind of teacher every student needs.
Yes. Share this with your kids' teachers because he goes through the process and what he asked of the students, what they did, how they came to these conclusions. So it's not just for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Right.
He's making a great case of how to be a great teacher.
Well, and the other thing is I can see how this could easily go wrong where we complain all the time about teachers pushing their agenda on kids. This was very clearly not that. This was every step of the way him asking his students, well, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
What would you like to do? And the kids
really... How
does that
make you feel and what do you want to do because of that?
The kids really taking charge of the process and then really dictating where they went from there with a little bit of oversight from their teacher to help them. You know, there's this funny part in the interview he talks about. I won't give too much away, but... Like they were emailing their elected leaders and they weren't getting a response. And then it was the staff who would respond. And he's like, how does that make you feel? And then eventually he did send an email on behalf of the students because they weren't hearing back from the elected leaders.
Right.
And it was like, so it's just a great interview. So we're going to save it for tomorrow because we just have so much on the show today. And I want to check in on the status of that bill before we bring you that. But man,
it's great.
As much as I dog on some teachers in this state, Mr. Hansen is the teacher every student deserves. Yep. Okay, with that, graffiti is now a crime again in Seattle. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. Oh, blessed be thy court that ruled in favor of sanity. Again, we also dog on a lot of courts and activist judges, and so it was really, really good to see the Ninth Circuit has upheld the city of Seattle's right to enforce its graffiti law. You might recall there was a lawsuit about this with, you know, the BLM protesters who want to be able to tag police precincts, and they feel like if you're going to arrest us for that, then you have to arrest a kid who's writing with chalk on the sidewalk. And so an activist judge basically made this like stay where the city couldn't enforce aspects of its graffiti law. And now the Ninth Circuit has reversed that. This from Como News. Seattle's right to enforce controversial graffiti laws. Sorry. Oh God. Do you just put that word in there for no reason? Why controversial? It's just a graffiti law restored by Court of Appeals. It says, this is from Ann Davis and the Seattle City Attorney. The people of Seattle won an important victory today when the Ninth Circuit upheld our city's right to enforce our laws against graffiti property destruction. Graffiti is a massive problem for our city, costing taxpayers, businesses, and residents millions of dollars while creating widespread visual blight. We must have as many tools as possible to protect neighbors and residents impacted by graffiti. I couldn't agree more. Thank God for Ann Davison and that little glimmer of sanity in the city of Seattle. Thank God for this decision from the Ninth Circuit. And Como News, there's a lot of things that are controversial. Graffiti laws ain't one of them. All right, that has been it for today's very fun, lively episode of Undivided. Always good to be here with you guys on a Monday. We have a great show in store for you tomorrow. Great week of shows. If you have not signed up to support our show already, please do so. It's an important election year, and we are working every day to find new ways to reach people, reach voters, and help tap into that little demand for sanity. I know everyone has it in there. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Just $5 a month, $54 if you pay for an entire year up front. You get 10% off of that yearly membership on Patreon. So UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. See ya.